You're listening to the Plus Music Podcast with Brian and Nick, where we're talking to artists about what it's like to get your music heard in the ever-changing music industry, how it is to use tools like social media and other platforms as an independent artist in a changing music business. Today we're sitting down with musicians, composers, and musical duo Tim McNally and Mara Kay. Coming together from opposite coasts, Mara, who comes from Brooklyn, New York, with a background in jazz, and Tim, who comes from San Diego, California, and is a multi-instrumentalist who's played with everyone I know here in San Diego, but also the likes of Ariana Grande and Sir Paul McCartney. Tim and Mara join us from their newly relocated Los Angeles dwelling and fill us in on their individual paths in music, where they intersected, and where they're going next. Here's more from Tim and Mara now.
Glad to be here.
Happy to be here.
What a strong intro. Yeah.
Wow, I guess we could cut the show now.
We've learned everything about you.
I think that's all it is, really. I'm out of here.
Good to see you guys. Good to see you, Tim.
It's been a while. Yeah, it's been a long time. It's very good to see you.
Where are you guys now? In Los Angeles?
We actually just finished moving. Last week, or Saturday, we handed our keys for our old house. And now we moved 3 miles east, and technically we're in the city of Alhambra.
We're in Alhambra.
LA County.
That's so crazy because I'm doing the same thing right now. We moved like 2 weeks ago. So there's that transition of just not feeling settled.
Yes.
It looked very settled. Fortunately, this room's kind of settled too, but you are semi-settled.
Yeah.
We'll take you to the garage. The garage is where it's really.
It's mine too.
Woof.
Cool.
So let's.
Dust is settling, and I mean, it's good to finally be doing things like this instead of moving dressers and refrigerators
and like placing books on the shelf so it looks cute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For nobody to come over to see.
Yeah, you guys. But people can hang out with people again.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
You know, I have.
Us too.
That's
a good way to be. I can't really play gigs with my mouth open singing at people without playing.
Right.
But I can safely keep everyone safe. So.
So when did you relocate from Brooklyn to the West Coast? And I would imagine, was that before the pandemic?
Well, we've been bi-coastally traveling back and forth and playing gigs and visiting for about 2 years. And right the day, basically the day that the world stopped was also the day that Tim and I were set to fly back out to Moscow to play another 10 days of shows. And then I was supposed to fly back to New York and then back here again. And the pandemic said, no girl, you stay right here. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of great because in my mind, I had been really kind of gearing up to be out here and spending time here and kind of planting seeds to be out here. And you can't really move somewhere new without having some idea that you're going to be okay and you'll find work. So everything kind of just started getting gigs booked in LA, and then, you know, everything kind of stopped. But what did happen was my dream came true and I got to live out here. Because I couldn't get back on the plane to New York. But we drove in my little van all the way to Brooklyn in October, moved me out. My lease was up in November officially in Brooklyn, and I'm born and raised there and have lived everywhere. And this was the apartment I was in for 4 years and really did most of my music work and made records in that house. And then I was like, yo, I gotta get out of here. Get out of here. My mom's still there, you know, my dog is still out there.
You drove from New York, or from California to New York, packed up a van and drove back.
And drove back, And we stopped, we have a national parks pass, so we stopped and I saw a lot of really beautiful parts of the United States that I never knew existed.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a beautiful way to transition from one chapter to the next. It was really he's a good road dog.
What's it look like for you guys going forward? Because, you know, obviously musicians are dying to get back, play music live. And, you know, Tim, I know that's what you do. all the time, right? So it's like, what does the future look like for you guys? Do you have gigs booked yet?
Yes.
A few here and there.
It's been interesting because like a couple, LA is way more tight still than San Diego is.
I've been doing some cold calls and people are like, oh, we don't have live music yet.
So we're actually playing in San Diego this Saturday at Panama 66.
Right.
Which is an outdoor space, right? So
It's right there in Balboa Park. And it's great. And I encourage all of you who may be listening or may be interviewing, if you want to
come on out to the show.
It'll be there. But there's been a few things, like, you know, few and far between, but still a few things that are popping back up. But I feel like a lot of what the last year has been is like, okay, how do I actually invent work for myself?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That is not, you know, someone calling me for a gig. And so a lot of what's been happening for me anyway has been like, I've been just recording string arrangements for people at home. And that's like, you know, not something I had set my heart on doing and thought like, okay, in 3 years I'll have this all together and then I'll be doing string arrangements for people from home. But it happened and it's honestly, it's awesome. So I'm gonna try and keep doing that. Otherwise, relatedly, I just started working at a spot that's it's a violin shop called The Violin Shop, and they rent instruments out. And so I'm fixing up those instruments for people to rent out.
Is violin your first instrument? Because
no.
It is. He taught himself the violin over the pandemic.
Yeah.
He's a very special.
I decided to pick it up like probably the December of 2019. I was
I'm going to teach myself violin.
And this is
you're just one of those guys. We have, I know you know my good friend Ray Swen too. We've had him on the show here. When we had him on the show, he was learning to play pedal steel during the pandemic. And his first gig was playing on the Grammys when they were doing the people who died. It's like, dude,
are you good, dude?
Well, and it's one of those things that I wanted to, you know, put in your guys' corner. Like, you know, there is the old saying, it's all in who you know, the networks we've built as musicians and being from shitty clubs in the beginning to playing with bigger bands, whatever it is. We meet these crossroads along the way, you know, people that were my tour manager at one point might be working with Guns N' Roses so we can get a backstage pass sometimes. Same, you know, we all know those people. That's a Ray story to me.
Yeah.
But what's the story, I guess, along the way there? You know, obviously I know more of yours, Tim, just being from San Diego. And Mara, I know Brooklyn and the New York music scene is even more complex and, you know, united. And you're just so many different genres in New York as opposed to San Diego. But, you know, give us a little insight on that for those who are at least trying to do some of these things that you guys are doing.
You want to talk about your journey a little bit?
Well, all right, let's take a journey. It started I've been singing since I'm a young kid. I went to junior high school for voice and I did theater in high school. And then I went to musical theater conservatory for college. And then I did the audition thing and it was so fun. I had a few cool things. I was in SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical in Asia, Broadway Asia, which was pretty exciting.
Where is Broadway Asia?
Well, this tour was in Malaysia and Singapore and
it's a tour.
It was a little tour. And then after that, I just kind of really, you know, auditioning in New York is definitely a practice, and it can be a challenge to continuously put yourself out there and wait for someone to tell you you're good enough to do it. And then I started just singing really kind of. I went to this jazz session at a spot called Mona's, which has this late session every Tuesday. So everyone after their gigs goes to Mona's and plays all together until like 4 a.m. and we drink and we play all the old jazz hits. And so I met kind of this older cat, this legend. His name is Terry Waldo. And he was like, I called a blues song. He was like, how do you know music like this? And let me buy you a drink. And it was like a Victorious Bybee tune from 1930 or something. So I followed him around, and he would always have me sit in with him. And then through him, I met some of my greatest teachers and my bestest friends in New York, all kind of the older generation. So the cats that I really came up with in New York were the cats that like came up with the cats that came before them, and the cats that came before them and toured with like Leon Redbone and, you know, Turk Murphy in San Francisco, and all of these crazy, you know, my bass player from New York was in the original cast of Crazy for You, playing bass and singing in the quartet. So it was really this beautiful school I went to just by living and breathing in this scene.
Yeah.
That taught me all about jazz and blues, and the right kind of jazz and blues, you know, mm-hmm. from the people that really loved doing it and weren't out to be stars, just like loved the music and loved yeah. playing and touring and just like connecting. And so I got to hear all the stories, and then they took me on tour. My greatest mentors, his name is John Gill. He had a band with 8 older gentlemen, huge jazz band, and they took me on tour with them. So I played the San Diego Jazz Festival before I knew anything about California. So I was out in San Diego before I even knew Tim.
Hotel Circle.
Wow.
The best representation of San Diego.
Yeah, you guys know.
But yeah, my greatest teachers took me everywhere. I sang on the Natchez and in New Orleans, you know, just playing all these incredible places with these dudes that were like my big brothers, and like,
yeah, so it's
age difference too. It was just like, I felt like I was living out this like old reincarnation of myself or somebody from many, many years ago, being this young chick playing with these old dudes.
So so what I hear is that, you know, you're waiting for people to tell you you could do something, and then you just went out and kind of did it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, theater. Okay, theater. Because I wasn't old enough to play the roles I'd probably would be right for anyway. Mm-hmm. And the agent I had at that time was like, you'll never play these roles now. You're too young. And I was like, okay. And she, you know, she was like a very Jewish New York woman. This is not for you now. You have to wait. And I was like, okay, so I'll wait. And honestly, music really took me on the journey and introduced me to the people of my life and the truth of like why I move the way I move. And it brought me to love and, you know, brought me to California. I thought I was always like, oh, I'm never leaving New York. I'm a Brooklyn girl. I'm never leaving Brooklyn. Like I didn't live in any other borough besides Brooklyn.
Wow.
And then I met Tim and got to hang out here in California. And I said, good God, you guys live like this? I didn't know you could live like this.
You can go outside and enjoy it here?
There's like things growing. We have one tree in Brooklyn. A tree grows in Brooklyn. Just one.
We turned our heater on last night because it was 68. So
yeah, if I'm out here, I bought sweaters. That was like cold. But yeah, it's the journey has led me to meet the most incredible people and travel the world and, you know, and collaborate. Hal Howard, are you kidding me? Like this dude. So it allowed us to work in a time where had I been in New York during the pandemic, I wouldn't have made any of the music I made sitting here with this guy. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have met Al Howard. The Dystopian Blues wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have met Dan Schreyer. We have a new crazy cool song that's we're shooting a video for very soon.
You know, the greatest story that we have about mutual friend Daniel Schreyer is I played with him for a little while, you know, after the Louis XIV days, he came and played with me with Nervous Records, and his first gig, I barely knew him, but his like cousin said, yeah, you should have my cousin play. And I had like something to go like on the radio station the next morning and play a Christmas song on 91X. So called him up and said, hey, look, if you can come learn this song and come on the radio station with me, you can play live gig with me, you know, starting next month, you know, when the show was. And he's like, yeah, no problem. So he comes on, learns it, and we're doing like the little interview afterwards, and I called him Daniel Schrader. Afterwards, it was like days later though, that, you know, I kept saying like, yeah, and I told him that Daniel Schrader's playing with us, and he goes, hey, you know, man, I just gotta tell you, it's actually Schreyer. It's not Schrader. So he let me kind of fuck his name up for like
a week
before actually correcting me, but he's still in my phone as D. Schrader. Yes, he is. Love that guy. Great musician he is.
He's a cool dude.
And quite a songwriter.
Quite a songwriter.
Right? Quite a songwriter. Yes, right. Absolutely. Beautiful. He's one of the best. One of the best. So,
yeah, music has led me to the greatest joys of my life, I would say. And the greatest.
So give us a little journey there, Tim.
Well, it's interesting, and it's a lot like what you were talking about before you posed the question, where I think a lot of people want, when they look at musicians, they want them to be like an artist that's working on it to make it big and like is going to get their break and then they're going to be big and then they're going to be touring the world. And it's kind of like just like a linear path. And it's never like that.
Yeah, it's never like that.
And the thing for me, the thing that I've always kind of cultivated and done is I've always done lots of different stuff and like played lots of different kinds of music, played with all kinds of weird people from weird disparate parts of the San Diego music scene that I love dearly. And it just meant one, that I always was working, which was great because I just love playing music with people. Well, that's what I want to do. But it also meant that I was just constantly expanding my understanding of what doing music is, because it's not a linear path like that. And I mean, at this point, I moved up to LA almost 3 years ago now, and the reason I did it was because I was working so much. I was just like working my ass off in San Diego. Like 2016 through 2018, I was playing like 300 plus gigs, just local gigs, like not even touring, not even playing musicals, just like grinding. And I was like, why am I working so hard right now? And so I decided, you know what, if I'm going to work this hard, I should probably move up to LA. And so I moved up to LA, and you're right. I wasn't like set out to like, okay, I'm going to try to get in with this crew and then like I'll play with Ariana Grande. I did not do that.
I'm just going to hit her on the DM but, and say, hey, I should play with you.
But I think to get to your original point, because I had such this, I had this weird broad, like,
the network.
Network of things that I am capable of. Someone who I never had met before, didn't know her name, sent me a text message that was like, hey, are you free on these three dates? And I was like, oh, kind of busy on that one, but I could do the other two. And she's like, oh, too bad, it's to play on the Grammys with Ariana Grande. And I was like, yeah, I think that I could.
I said, you better move that schedule around, like, bucko.
I think that I could probably make that work. And it's just like, all you have to do is be around for the cold call, be reliable.
Yeah.
And like not be a dick to people.
Don't be a dick to people.
Because here's the thing. Like I went to school for music. I studied upright bass with Mark Dresser, who's like one of the world's great bass players. Like incredibly inventive, like masterful technique, great human, great musician, great intellect, all of it. And I got out of school and I was like 300% overqualified for most of the work I've done since. So like, not that that's not a bad thing. I was like glad to study that deep and like get involved with it. And I'm not upset that I'm not like doing very difficult music all the time. But I realized like the things that I've done recently that were like the most notable, or like cool that you did that, or like people notice that and they're like, oh wow, you're really doing music. This isn't just like a fun thing that you do for yourself.
You're really doing it.
You like have a career. The things that I could have done when I was 17, but you just set up a situation where you can do it. People trust you. You're reliable. And like eventually something will happen, something amazing. And you know what? It happens and it's really cool for a second. And maybe something else happens after it. And then you know what? You go back to playing dive bars
for a little bit.
And you know what? You go back to like teaching lessons for a little bit. And you know, recording with people that you maybe didn't really want to record with. But like, you know, like it always, there's ebbs and flows and it's not a linear path. It's not a climb up the stairs. And it's like once you've played the Grammys, you're not only playing the Grammys the rest of your life.
Because it's a one-year event.
The Grammys only are one day out of the year.
Yeah.
and you need to work the rest of the year.
That's right.
And so it's the main thing is like, you just got to really be in it to work. And mm-hmm. you got to, however you're doing it, even if you're like an artist who's not like, I'm studying how to play the guitar so that I can play Latin jazz and classical gigs. It's just like, you got to work on who you are as an artist, or you have to work on whatever it is. You have to like show up for it like it's a job. Mm-hmm. And you have to be willing to accept that not every day is, you know, the big break. And even after you have that big break, it's like, you still got to work. You always mm-hmm. got to keep going. And,
That's work for you. That's great.
Yeah.
How does technology change, you know, social media? Like, so when you guys first started, social media is not where it's at now. The life of everybody is totally changed. Like communication is completely changed. How does that medium affect the way you guys get outreach? I mean, if you're doing your own project, then you obviously use it to put the name out, whatever. But if you're a session musician, do you also use it and make sure people know that you're working? Like, do you use it for that to seem busy, or how are you both using it?
Social media is a really funny game as an artist. I think it's it can be very helpful in many ways as far as reaching people. But I also feel that, you know, we're in this age now where I'm expected to be a video editor, a photographer, a PR person, a networker, all for myself. And there are people that exist in this world that studied to do that really well, to collaborate with artists who are supposed to create and present and connect and do that thing. So yes, now I'm expected, because social media and everyone is their own business now, and especially after a pandemic where that's all we had to rely on, it's really hard. And it can be really discouraging sometimes because it becomes this popularity contest. But then you have to pay to play. So you don't know who's actually and what people actually like, because there's this pay to play idea. And then there's also like, how many hashtags can I use? And then like, you post a selfie that gets like 200 likes, and then you post a video of music that you're really passionate about and you're so proud of, and it gets like 20. Mm. And so then you have to like take that to the chest and say, is it me? And do I want to feel this, like, do I want to let this, like, device make me feel less than because people don't like it or haven't seen it because Instagram hid it because you didn't pay to promote it? You know, it's like this, it's a very, it's just, it's kind of just, it's been a little discouraging for me.
Or was the selfie, did you wear Ace Frehley face paint?
Right. Exactly.
Any member of KISS face paint could garner the likes.
Yeah. I mean,
400 likes alone.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard because, you know, I'm an artist that's been sitting on like 6 projects that I've had for the past 10 years. And I'm finally in the position, I think, for like myself feeling grounded in the artist, rooted in the artist I am, to actually start releasing these projects. And I think the thing that's the most scary is like, you make this thing and then you're like, okay, here it is. Now buy my record, watch this video, check this live stream out, do this thing. Can you do this for me? And it's hard. Because say, I've made this beautiful thing, I'd love for you to enjoy it. I want this to make you feel good. I don't need to be famous because I made this song. I want you to feel something. And how
but
do you-
But at the same that? Time, you want to be able to make, put food on the table doing what
That's
you
right.
love, right?
And so, so you have
there's,
to,
there's kind of this, it's like anything that gets commercialized, it ends up changing slightly, right? And the whole intentions have to get, you know, it's a flexible like boundary, you know, where you're, this is my creative boundary, but over here is where I need to have to kind of make that bridge happen.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, it seems like every musician that you talk to, I've never talked to one that was like, fuck yeah, I love Instagram.
I love it.
It's the best thing ever in my life, you know?
So great. Yeah.
It's like,
so
good like for me. Yeah, all right. Yeah, do it, you know? And
yeah, you gotta do it.
It's like, and then they're like, yeah, it's working. This other guy was that we interviewed was, he's like, yeah, it's pretty good now. But 5 years ago, when I first started doing this, they sucked and they're horrible. Yeah. Go back that long and see what they're like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's like a really long game, and then you got to pick the right platform at the right moment. And yeah, you're right. It's
on the hindsight of that. I mean, the world is your stage. That's been a proverb for as long as even I've been a kid. Mm-hmm. Number one, it's a little more literal now, but with any type of like success, I don't think it ever gets easier. It always gets like harder, you know?
Yeah.
So like now to be an artist, you kind of have to dive in at like what it's like when you have an album out, you're on the road 10 months out of the year, living in a bus bunk in a hotel every three nights, you know, it's like that comes along with a little bit of success. Now it's like you have to do that from day one.
Yeah.
You don't all of a sudden get to do Instagram twice a month. In hopes that this
everyday
work cycle happens, you build that muscle. So when you get to that point of your career, you're ready to go. You're seasoned. You're, oh, I have to cancel three shows because I sang two in a row and my voice is a little rough. Fuck that, man. You're going to be able to sing 100 shows in a row because you're talking every day on social. You're building your stage act with your fans on social.
Yeah,
it becomes second nature, so it does help, you know. I think
I think on the bands of that, you know? It's very, the reach is, you can reach so many more people than you ever would be if you were just playing your local
diets.
Mm-hmm. It really allows you to connect with people that, you know, I mean, I have elementary school friends that like every so often are like, hey, how you doing, love what you're, I'm like, oh, hey girl. We were friends when we were 8 years old. How's everything? And that's nice. Yeah. I love that.
Or like now people from Russia that are like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah,
like,
I'm coming to town. Are you playing any gigs? Like that is
what's super cool. Tell us about the Russia gig. How'd that come around?
So I
KGB?
No, definitely not.
BGK.
A wonderful trumpet player. Was in New York, visiting New York. And I had this steady gig at this really awesome cocktail bar called the Dead Rabbit, right by like downtown, kind of by the seaport. And I was playing with this phenomenal piano player, Connell Fowkes, and he came up to us and he was like, would you ever want to come to Russia? And I was like, well, yeah, of course I would. And he was like, well, I have a spot in Moscow. And I said, well, I would love to, but I can't really, you know, I can't pay for that. And he was like, no, I will bring you there. And I was like, okay, sounds awesome. And he was like, where else are you playing this week? And I just so happened to be making my debut at Lincoln Center, Jazz at Lincoln Center. So he came to the show. I call him Snack. So Snack was actually at the show. And
Snack is Tim.
We all met that day. It was really interesting. We all met. But I didn't hear from him after a while, for a little bit. And I hit him up and I was like, hey, were you serious about Moscow? Because that sounds amazing. And he was like, yeah. And then we just started about talking about visas and passports and, you know, the line of shows. And we got on the plane and I turned to him and I said, I have to tell you a secret. I never checked this guy out to see if he was good.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, at least
you're going to be playing.
Like the whole thing, I was like, we're just going to go. It's going to be fine. Because if for nothing else, him and I would be great. The guy was amazing. It was the most incredible experience. It was, he had the most talented group of dudes playing traditional jazz in this bar called the Bix, which was built and modeled after trumpet player Bix Beiderbecke from the 20s and the teens. And he booked all these shows for us and everyone loved it. That's the best part about music, I think, is that it's such a beautiful universal language that you could travel anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
and play and immediately just connect with people. And they'll understand, especially singing the blues too. There's a feeling, and it's an unexplainable, intangible thing, but it just really connects you to people in this really. Yeah.
And you were about to go back.
We were literally about to get on a plane. My family's like, "Why are you doing this to us?"
Like, stuck in Russia during the winter of a pandemic. Sounds hole. Like.
And we were like, "Okay, we're gonna do it still, I guess."
That whole week leading up to it was hilarious because it was her family basically having heart attacks,
my
calling
New York,
her and like
having conniptions,
like trying
every
to
day.
Convince her not to go, and then Constantine, who's the trumpet player who set it all up, being like, "This is fine. This is you get a virus, you get sick, maybe you die, maybe you don't, but we play music. This is what we do. You come here,
I'll
take care of
it." He said, "We get you insurance for just in case. It's no big deal." And we're like, "Okay."
I was like, "That is the most Russian attitude you could possibly have."
Oh yeah, they're tough.
Come to die here, die there. What is the difference?
For just in case.
Yes.
I mean, he's the best. He really is. It was just awesome. His birthday, but we were taken care of. Like, I've never been taken care of on a trip like that, where I felt like I was a celebrity being, you know, like taken around. He like didn't even let us pay for coffee.
God, see,
no one did.
Nobody did. Nobody did. I was like, "I got this. It's okay." And they're like, no, please, please."
Пожалуйста.
It was beautiful. And you know, I have a nice, beautiful little group of friends now that are out there and can't wait for us to return. And that's, that feels really, that's something else. But the cool thing is that Constantine was like, "I'll take care of all the promo. Don't worry. Just send me some photos." And so it was like the night of our first gig. And it was like, you know, all these things, all this information in Russian. And then when you hit, see translation like on Facebook, I recognized that he said, "Marikay, you know, all the way from Brooklyn, pick the place, sell your car, that's blues, baby."
Makes sense.
Pick the place.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Sell your car, that's blues, baby.
Does that
that's probably it's probably some idiom.
Quotable of my life.
It's like some idiom. Have you ever heard the podcast Winds of Change?
Mm-mm. No.
You know that song Scorpions, Wind of Change?
Can you sing a little? How does it go?
There's a no. But there is a whistle that you would know. So it's worth listening to though. It's super interesting. And it's like all about the CIA and this song and like this rumor, and they go all through Russia. And so like probably bring back some memories from your trips, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting.
We did see one kind of a lot of people going into it were like, "Russia, like, aren't you a little scared? Aren't you a little worried?" And I was like,
"No,
no." What? Why would it be any worse than any other country to go to? But there's just like this general, like, weird, like, anti-Soviet thing that's still kind
so
of
old
like
school, such an old school mentality
in our country where people are like,
I'm a kid from the 80s, man. Every movie was the Russians were the bad guy.
They're
bad guys in most
really
America.
Not. Moscow is bursting with music and art and you know, joy. The audience, actually coming from New York at that time, back to bringing it back to social media, it was kind of hard to be playing these gigs, you know, as like background music and having people that's from there.
Mr. Anderson.
Having people just, you know, come into a venue, just throw their camera up in your face because it's proof that they were there and something cool was going on, and then like talk over you and look at their phone. And it was nice to go to Russia because everyone was just there.
Yeah.
In that moment, in that week, I don't know, maybe it's because we were like from the US and they were like, cool. But everyone was just like really in the moment.
And that's true. That was like the best part of touring. Mm-hmm. And people, we could go anywhere as long as it was like American people from California. Are you kidding me? When you're in like Dusseldorf, Germany, Just putting that on a flyer alone.
Yeah.
Don't know about the music, but California?
Like, yeah.
California?
Yeah.
A real Californian? Look at it.
Yeah, I think it was.
Dude.
You got to make sure to throw lots of those in.
Yeah. You'd hear, and they'd even do it. Hello, dude. That awesome.
Dude.
Totally.
Yeah, they really like my accent when I travel. They really, really like it.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I like to shout little things on the mic and they have no idea what I'm saying, but they really like how it sounds. Like, wow, she really is from New York.
So you guys, you're coming out of a pandemic.
Yeah.
Gigs are coming back.
Yes.
Mara, you got a record coming out.
I got a record coming out.
Way, you know, 98% of our listener base, I'm going to say, is musicians who want to know what it, you know, how to get their music out there, get heard.
Yeah.
Fans of those bands, etc. What would you say, you know, dipping back in, trying to get these gigs?
Yes.
From that point of view, to also staying active in the session music world. Is any tips, anything like that, or what's coming up for you guys? What's your strategy for the rest of the year?
What I would say is have like a team.
Yeah, have a team. Mm-hmm. Don't be scared to ask for help.
And like, don't be precious about what you do either. I think that's
guilty.
That's
guilty.
The number one thing that really just keeps people locked in place is they make music and they're like, I want to release this music. And then they think, but what if not everybody likes it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, who gives a fuck if everybody likes it?
I think that's happened to me a lot.
If you like it and like you're behind it, put it out.
Yeah.
And like you really have to be your biggest fan.
You do.
Because even if you're making the dopest music ever, if you're like, I don't know, it's like it's not that cool, and you kind of like,
no one's gonna believe it.
And it's right, like, why would I listen to your music if you don't like it?
Or if you make the coolest music and you never put it out, how can anybody hear it?
Yeah. So
guilty.
And I think that
self doubt will get you there.
The best way to get around that is like send it to people you trust.
Yeah.
Ask for help.
Yeah. Ask
like,
for help.
Yo, I don't know what to do with this. Do you have any ideas?
Yeah. How did you get that DistroKid set up? It's like, I just called people. Finally, I was like, I need to ask people who've done this what to do. Sometimes social media is great for that too. Hey, I'm having trouble putting this out. Any ideas? And it's like, you'll get like a list of 18, 19 comments. And it's like, that's cool because that's the forum. I think that's really helpful for something like that.
The other thing is there's people and there's entities and there's labels that do this thing all the time.
Yeah.
And the thing that she's releasing coming up is all through Big Tone Records.
Big Tone Records.
And it's like the same kind of thing. It's like all you got to do is like have the artistic vision and have the initiative and the drive to put it out. And like if you find the right person that does that thing already and like is into it and behind it, you're good to go. Like, this dude, John, Big Tone, is like the man. He like totally gets it. He records all the shit and he's an amazing musician himself. He's connected with all the right people in the scene. And like,
it's my, the fa- it's
and,
my favorite.
And to have
way
like
I've
someone like that on your team
recorded.
Is the best way to make it happen.
Yeah.
So right now, especially there's this imperative that people are like, I need to be able to do it all on my own. Like you do it all on your
you
own
could,
now.
Yeah.
But it's like,
why?
You can do a lot on your own, but get help.
Yeah, I would say get help is a huge one. And I would say love yourself a lot.
Would you also say be good? Like get good at what you do?
Oh, you have to practice. Practice is everything. You have to continuously work on your craft. It's not something that you're like, oh yeah, I do this thing good. Now I'm just gonna like maybe graze by. You can you'll graze, but like if you wanna really work, you have to work at it. It's not, it's a gift that you're given to work on and nourish and take care of and honor, you know.
But also I think the most people that you see drop out of music are the ones that are like not willing to just put their nose down and like really work on
really
it.
Really hustle.
And be like, oh wait, okay, I do need to just get a little bit better. That's it.
Yeah.
And like you said, just like
get
be good. Be on top of your craft.
Yeah, you have to be good because then people will want to collaborate with you. And I think collaboration is a beautiful way to stretch who you are as an artist and really grow your musical library and your community.
Yeah, Love it. Well, it's a great place to leave off, I think. It's a great place to stop. Mm-hmm. Thanks for taking the time, guys.
It's thank great you for having you. Us. Yeah. This is
great
so nice
to see you. It's great to,
great to see both your faces again.
I know, man.
Absolutely. Well, give us a song that we can play out for, you know, our audience.
I would say Dystopian Blues.
Dystopian Blues.
Yeah.
Dystopian Blues. Well, yeah. Here it is in its entirety, guys. Keep us posted on what's new in 2021, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Take care,
stay
guys.
Stay well.
Bye bye.